This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify POS has everything you need to sell in person. Go to shopify.com/system, all lowercase, to take your retail business to the next level today. That's shopify.com/system.
Weird. I don't really want to talk about murder today.
Oh, did you prepare a script?
What are you trying to make me feel bad? What is that? I didn't sign up.
No, I didn't. And I was very clear about that 2 years ago. I would not be.
Can't do it.
Welcome to another episode of True Crime Creepers, where we talk about all the real-life creeps, from serial killers to con artists. I'm Kristen, the true crime fanatic who loves to tell these stories.
And I'm Mogap, the true crime newbie who hasn't heard any of them.
This, you've got to stop with this. Okay, are we recording?
March 16th,
because
yes.
Let's talk about your blonde hair, because between you and Christina, who I just watched Marco Polo for her, and she's like, I just chopped my hair off at Supercuts. Excuse me? First of all, my bridesmaids are brunette, and they have long hair, okay? They don't have blonde or $8 Supercuts. Now, I sound like a bridezilla. I don't actually care, but I do care about you being blonde.
I'm going platinum.
No, you're not.
Yeah, I am.
When? September 17th?
March 16th. March 16th. So you'll have to get used to it. Yeah. That's when my hair appointment is.
Oh. That's so funny. I think I have a hair appointment on the 17th. That's why I was like, wait, what?
Oh, really?
Wait, why are you doing this? What is this, Jessica Rabbit? I don't understand.
Look, Jessica Rabbit was a redhead.
Well, I know.
She?
She's like, Yeah, I don't know. She had ears. I don't know. Did she have
but
hair?
But thanks for comparing me to Jessica Rabbit. That's kind of the energy I'm looking for, so...
Why would you do this to me? Did you black out during the whole Panera exchange? Do you know how fragile my emotions are? I just reread the whole thing to Russell when we were at dinner. And it was like so much more erratic.
Hey, you got to tell the people about your Panera experience. We talked about it in the HelloFresh ad, but you got to tell the people. Or no, in the BetterHelp ad.
I know. People probably think that that's like made up. No, this is a true story of how I don't know what happened, but talk about the straw that broke the camel's back. I was having such a Monday. I go to Panera and I order.
Wait, you're skipping the part where you'd already been to a different Panera.
Well, yeah. Well, no, you don't tell the people that yet because you didn't know that at the time. I go to this Panera and all I could think about is an Asiago cheese bagel. It's all I want. I go, I order it. There's four, and you know it's a risk you're taking when you go at lunchtime because, you know, it's Monday, all the bagels, people brought the bagels into work. There are four cheese bagels in the bin. I ordered the bagel. I'm thinking, I don't, like, you know, there's plenty of time. I'm not thinking I'm, like, in line behind all the people that are ordering the food as they're prepping it. So I wait, and I wait, and wait, nothing. I go stand over there because I'm like, maybe my little buzzer isn't going to ring because it's a bagel. Then they lay out three trays, individual trays, each with a cheese bagel. And I'm like, oh my gosh, they must have put my order in multiple times, like, the button must have gotten stuck. These are all for me. Like, I'm about to go pick one of these up. And this man walks up, and I watch him pick up each bagel and stack it on one plate. And here's the other thing that I knew they were mine is because I ordered it sliced with butter only. Most people get cream cheese with a bagel. None of these bagels had a cream cheese. I watch this man take that platter of all three bagels and go sit down and eat them all. And then my little buzzer goes off. I walk up there and the guy's like, Samantha? I said, yes. He said, we're out of bagels. And instead of just taking it, I said, you can't be. I feel like I'm going to in exchange. And so y'all, in order to prevent, I felt the tears coming. Like I was going to cry over this bagel. I start frantically texting Kristen. Like, I'm about to cry in this Panera. Like, it was so bad. I'm like, Kristen, I'm going to cry in this Panera. And then I'm just watching this guy. It's such a psycho move. He takes all of the bagels. That's six pieces of thick-ass bread. And he's buttering them up. He's going to eat them all. And I can respect you eating the three bagels. I can't respect you eating three of the same bagel. Would you do three of the same? Or wouldn't you
if there
like,
were only three left in the tub? No.
Like the last get, like, a cheese three bagels. And like maybe a blueberry bagel. Like you wouldn't eat three of the same.
I'd probably
bagel?
Mix it up. If I was gonna eat three bagels, which I definitely would eat three bagels, I would definitely mix it up.
I tell you, the shock when I felt the tears coming, like, are you about to cry in this crowded ass Panera over this bagel? And the answer was yes. Yes, I was. And Kristen is right. It was mainly because that is the second Panera I went to.
Mm-hmm.
Because I wanted it
looking
so
for that
badly.
Bagel.
I couldn't go to a third. I didn't have it in me to go to a third, but.
Not when you'd gotten so close. I mean, all the way to the buzzer.
I was
buzzer.
Like texting you so hard, like so fast, because I thought, I'm going to lose it in this Panera. And then I was like, I am unwell. Something is wrong with me. I should not be crying over this bagel. But it was like such a bad day. And it was the fact that he was just over there buttering my, just staring at me. And the guy was like, yeah, we don't have any bagels. I'm like, but you sold it to me. I think that's what I said to him. I think I looked at the guy that's like prepping the plates. He obviously has nothing to do with this. I'm like, but you sold it to me. Like, I've been scammed. This is the scam story you've been warning me about. And it happened. I was sold a product. They told me they didn't have it.
Mm-hmm.
It was terrible. I almost tweeted at them. I'm trying to really stop just tweeting at brands because I realize that it's it's defining my personal brand, and that's unfortunate.
Oh, no.
That is unfortunate.
Okay, well, I've got a pretty good story for you today.
I hope so. I hope it's better than that one.
Today we're talking about the murder of Connie DeBate. And big apologies to our reviewer, Liz. I did not use a book this time.
Man, if Liz knew how much free airtime she was getting.
I did not use a book this time. And mostly a Dateline episode. It's her least favorite, so.
Well, what are we doing here?
But big thanks to an episode of Dateline. Season 31, episode 13, The Secrets of Birchview Drive. Birchview Drive in Ellington, Connecticut is this gorgeous road that winds through this wooded area. The houses are huge and they're spread far apart with a lot of beautiful land around them. There were maybe like seven houses on this section of the street, and one of those belonged to 39-year-olds Richard and Connie DeBate and their two children. Rick and Connie met at a party while she was home from college over the summer. And she loved that he was an Italian. She had a thing for Italian men, and everyone thought that Rick was this great fit for her. He was really fun, and she was really fun, and his family loved her just as much. And his mom said that she could tell that she was different when he brought her home. Like, she was different from all the other girls. She said that Rick was glowing when he introduced them.
I'd love to meet a woman who doesn't like an Italian man. I'd be interested in that.
Yeah, I mean,
who are you?
Yeah.
And what's your problem?
Do you exist? Yeah. Who hurt you? Over the next decade, Rick and Connie got married. He got a job as a computer network administrator, and she was a pharmaceutical sales rep. They had two kids, and they settled into life in their house on Birchview Drive. This was the perfect house for the perfect lifestyle for Rick and Connie. Connie was best friends with two other women who lived on the street, Darlene and Peggy, and they called themselves the Three Amigos or the Three Musketeers. And you could always find them together, hanging out, having dinner, having wine nights. And like, I have always like wanted that. Like, when I moved into my new house, I was like, I'm going to make friends with the neighbors. Oh, yeah. And we're going to like go over all the time. We're going to have wine nights. And it never happened. It has not happened.
I know. Sweet Magnolias really ruined me too. I was like watching that. I'm like, why isn't this my life? Like, why didn't I just move in and have these like. And Russell's like, these people knew each other since they were childhood friends. I'm like, quit ruining my dreams.
Yeah.
I just felt like, yeah.
These women didn't. They met in adulthood and they became the Three Musketeers. And I feel like it could happen for us, but.
We need a third Musketeer. Applications open now.
Just like that, like, I don't know, that, like, I'm home, you're home, like.
Casual, yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like even now it's hard, like, it's almost like everything has to be so planned. Like, I have a few people here in Louisville, but it's like, hey, let's, and I just want to be able to be like, hey, I'm popping over in my sweatpants, you know?
Yes, exactly. I know. Everything has to have a plan. It was just this beautiful life that they all shared on this beautiful street until December 23rd, 2015, when their beautiful life was completely shattered. I always get sad when this stuff happens so close to the holidays. Like, anniversaries of traumatic events are always terrible and hard, but when it's Christmas and now it's like Christmas every year is a reminder of this terrible thing, it makes me sad. Anyway, that morning, 2 days before Christmas, Peggy was at home. This is Connie's friend Peggy, who lives in the neighborhood. She was washing some dishes in the kitchen sink when she looked out the window and she saw a state trooper outside of Connie's house with his lights flashing and his gun drawn. Like, he was out of his car pointing a rifle at Connie's house.
Like, behind the door. Like,
behind his door, pointed at their house. Peggy was really freaked out. She immediately tried calling Connie and couldn't get through. There was no answer. So she called Darlene, the third of their musketeers. And before Peggy could even finish telling Darlene why she was calling, the entire street started filling with police cars coming in at full speed. Sirens screeching, one after the other, just surrounding the debate house. Peggy would later discover that the alarm at the debate house had been triggered and police had received a 911 call that morning. And on this call, at first there was no response from the caller. So the dispatcher says, "Hello," and you just hear a male voice say, "Need help," in kind of a monotone, flat voice. And then they hung up. First responders arrived at the house quickly, and they found Rick DeBate lying face down in the kitchen. There were smears of blood all around him, and this is really weird and hard to describe, but there was a folding chair lying on his back, folded up, with one of his arms and one leg zip-tied behind his back to the folding chair.
I bet he was, like, sitting in it, and then it, like, he collapsed and it collapsed.
Or he, like, was trying to get out of it. Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it looked like. Like, he had been sitting in it, he tried to get up, and now was face forward with it on his back. At first, the first responders thought that he was dead, but then they heard moaning. He was alive. The responders quickly rushed him to the hospital while others continued to search the house. They found Connie in the far corner of the basement, dressed in sweatpants and a sweatshirt and wearing sneakers. She had been shot twice, once in the stomach and once in the back of the head. She was dead. Detectives Lamoureux and Luther were called and told that there had been an intruder at the house and that there was a body in the basement. They arrived at the scene around 1:15, and by this time, the house had been secured as a crime scene. State troopers were all over the neighborhood searching, knocking on doors, clearing houses they thought the intruder might be trying to hide in. Several of them had canines. Even the media is already starting to show up. The first task for detectives when they got there was to get a search warrant for the property, which meant they needed to get information from the other state police personnel that were there, and then they had to get a judge to sign it. And they were able to do this pretty quickly, and once the search warrant was approved, they and the other troopers got ready to go into the house. And so
did you say where anything about their two kids?
They are at school.
Okay.
Yeah, thank you. They are at school. It's the middle of the, like, it's like, yeah, middle of the day.
Okay.
On a weekday. So they put on gloves, masks, Tyvek suits, and shoe covers because this is not their first day on the job.
That's great because let me tell you how many people be trouncing through there without any of that.
Yeah, this is actually the first time that I've heard detectives, like, detail. I'm sure they're not the first ones that have, like, prepared like that to go into a crime scene, but I usually don't find information
like that.
They
want to tell you about it. They're like, let us remind you that we did it this way.
Exactly. Like, I found a whole article. Like, this is exactly what we did. The first time they entered was just a walkthrough, just to get an idea of the scene, not to, like, collect evidence. It was 2 days before Christmas, so all the Christmas decorations were up, and they knew they had the two young kids. They were 6 and 9. And like I said, luckily they were at school at the time of the home invasion. The detectives did their initial walkthrough and then they went through the house taking video and pointing out different pieces of evidence along the way. Like they saw drops of blood on the stairs leading down to the basement. Detectives worked well through the night doing an in-depth search and seizing evidence. They did not leave the house until around 9:30 the next morning. That's like 17 hours searching this house. Or 18. It's a long time.
Yeah, like, is there, like, a donut coffee break in there?
Surely they got pizza or something.
Oh, hopefully not pizza, if you know what I mean.
Wait, I don't know what you... Connie's friends and family were absolutely devastated. She was just the sweetest person. It was so hard for them to wrap their minds around the fact that she had been murdered. She was the baby of her family. She had two older sisters and an older brother, and they were a close family. Her friends were as close to her as her family as well.
I know. I most upset about the musketeer. I mean, her family, that is so sad, but these gals.
I know. They've lost their musketeer. They all said she was such an easygoing person, the kind of friend that you feel an instant connection with the first time you meet them, the kind of person you just want to spend time with. So many people, I think this says a lot about Connie. So many people, like all of her friends, all thought of Connie as their best friend. Like Connie was their best friend. So it was absolutely unbelievable to anyone that she could be murdered. And investigators were anxious to find out what had happened here. They hadn't been able to get much information out of Rick before he'd been rushed to the hospital. So detectives headed over to the hospital to see if they could get a statement about what happened. He was the best witness they had of this murder, and they were really hoping that he could give them a description of this intruder. Rick had been stabbed in the legs and shoulder, and he had injuries on the back of his head. But when detectives arrived, he was conscious and he was able to tell the story of what happened that day.
No gunshots?
No gunshots for him. He was not shot.
Let me get that on record.
Was that a
Yeah, sorry, I didn't squint my eyes enough.
I don't know what you're talking about. I don't know why it's so weird that they would have different injuries with different weapons, you know?
Yeah, totally.
No red flags here. He said that that day had been such a normal day. They'd gotten the kids off to school, Connie had gotten ready to head to the gym, and Rick had left to drive to work. And he'd gotten about 10 minutes away from the house when he realized that he'd left his laptop at home, so he turned around to go back for it. And then while he was on his way back, he saw on his phone like a bunch of alert notifications going off from his home security system.
That's very convenient.
Well, yeah, it's like, what is happening at my house? All these alerts going off on the alarm. And so he was like, okay, I got to deal with this. Something's going on. So he, like, from his phone, he pulled over. He quickly emailed his boss to let him know that he was going to be late to work because he had to check out some things on this security system. And so then he got back to the house and he heard some noises coming from upstairs, and he thought it was just his cats like knocking things over and messing things up, as cats do. And this was a regular thing for his cats.
Cats do. Someone who knows personally.
So he didn't think anything of the noise. He went further into the house and he went upstairs. He walked into the bedroom where the noise was coming from and he realized it wasn't the cats. Someone was inside his room, inside the closet, the walk-in closet.
Why would you think it's the cats? You think the cats are tripping out your security system too?
I think he thought just something was wrong with his security system. He's like, I got to fix this because why are alerts going off? Yeah. And this man was wearing camouflage and a mask and just seemed to be like looking around the closet for something of value. He's just kind of looking around perusing the place. Rick couldn't really give a description of the guy because he was wearing a mask, except to say that he was a big guy. He was over 6 feet tall and stocky. He couldn't even be totally certain of a skin color. The only thing Rick could describe was the man's voice. He said he sounded like Vin Diesel.
He did not. God, I wish he did.
He did.
He said he sounded like Vin Diesel.
Who Dateline described as that megawatt Hollywood actor from the Fast and the Furious franchise with an instantly recognizable deep gravelly voice. I'm not familiar. I don't know who that is.
Wait, I can't get over the he had a voice. He sounded like Vin Diesel. Like in your moment of like absolute trauma, you're like, I know who he sounds like. Vin Diesel.
Yeah. If you're lucky.
What a legend. Yeah. So then you're immediately thinking your wife's having an affair, right? Because Vin Diesel's in your home. Right. Like, that's the only answer then. Like, oh.
Well, except for Vin Diesel was holding a knife. And when he saw Rick, he demanded his wallet and threatened to wait for his family to get home if he didn't give over what he was asking him for.
And then you're like, okay, I'll get my wallet. But like, are you Vin Diesel? Is this Vin Diesel? Are you asking? Like, you sound a lot like Vin Diesel.
Are you hard up? Isn't there another Fast and Furious coming out? Like,
Aren't you busy?
What are you doing in my closet asking for my wallet? Yeah. Sorry, Vin Diesel. Times are tough.
Vin Diesel, is Scott Eastwood here also?
And Vin Diesel would never threaten your family because he knows how important family is.
Yeah. But he's living a... What is it? I live my life quarter mile at a time.
God. And that's when Rick heard the garage door opening. And he heard the door to the garage open and
sorry. He's... Mm-hmm. This guy, Vin Diesel, said like, hey, go get your wallet. Or what did he say?
He said like, give me your wallet. And if you don't give it to me, I'm going to stay here until your family gets home. So you should just give it to me now.
So they're like exchanging pleasantries. And right. Then he hears the garage door open.
And then he hears the garage door open. He knows it's Connie coming home from the gym. And he hears the door open. She walks in. They're upstairs at this time. Okay. She's coming in on the downstairs. And he screams at her to run. Run, Connie. But Connie didn't run out of the house. She knew that they had two guns in the house. One was in the closet that the intruder was standing in, and the other was in a lockbox in the basement. And so Rick said she must have been trying to get to that gun when she ran down to the basement.
Yeah, which is weird, because who's running down to a basement?
Well, she ran down there to get the gun.
Yeah, I know, but like if the options are a gun upstairs, get out or a gun,
or get the gun.
Yeah, I'm not choosing going out into the a front basement. Door.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. 100%. So Vin Diesel knocks Rick to the ground. He ran after Connie. Rick got up and ran after him. And as he was running after him, he heard a loud bang. And his ears were ringing, but he ran down to the basement. And that's where he saw Connie on the ground. And Vin Diesel came and put Rick in a chokehold, and then he threw him on a folding chair and tied him to the chair with zip ties, but just one leg and one arm. I guess he got bored and stopped with well, just yeah, half like, the body. And
then he ran out of zip ties. Like, tied... oh, shit, I only brought two.
I only brought two. And he also tied one around his neck.
Crap, I only brought two.
But I need three to connect him to go around but his need... neck.
Yeah, but so then the neck. He also tied one around his neck. And then
zip tie is fitting around your neck. You're like connecting a bunch of zip ties, like a zip tie paper chain.
Well, he had just one separate around his arm connected to the folding chair. Then his leg connected to the folding chair. And then his neck. So they were like
connected to what?
Yeah, none of them are connected to each other. All connected right. to the chair.
But how is a zip tie connecting to his neck? What's on his neck? A zip tie?
I'm not clear on if the zip tie was just around the neck. I don't think he was attached to the chair by the neck. So I think he just had a zip tie around his neck.
Have you ever seen a zip tie that big? Okay, moving on.
I mean, I have seen, like, there are longer zip ties.
Oh, okay.
I don't know. But then...
He's got a girthy neck.
Well, and he is Italian, too, so...
Move on.
Look, this is a totally plausible story. I don't know.
I know. Really hung up on the deets thinking. Over here.
Yeah, exactly. So once he got him all tied up to the chair, to this folding, well, all tied, half tied, you know, half his body's tied up. He started going at him with Rick's own tools. He got like a toolbox from the basement and he stabbed Rick with his own box cutter, burned him with Rick's blowtorch. And so Rick used his free arm to fight back, and he managed to get the blowtorch from him, and he thought he'd even managed to burn the intruder's mask. And so the intruder ran off, and Rick managed to climb up the basement stairs, still attached to the chair, and managed to call 911.
Woof.
Yeah. Luckily for Rick, all of his injuries were superficial, and he was discharged and sent home later that same day. So that was lucky. For him.
Yeah. That is lucky for him.
So now investigators have Rick's story. And if I was an investigator, let me tell you what would sound weird to me.
Tell me.
First off, why would the intruder shoot Connie but not Rick?
Why? Yeah, especially when him and Rick are up there having a whole like conversation like, right. Give me your wallet. If you don't give me your
maybe
wallet.
Maybe they like, bonded during that time. And he
when
decided,
he's like, hey, you sound like Vin Diesel. He's like, thanks, man. I've always wanted to be a voice actor. And then, yeah.
And so
like,
then he, instead of shooting him, he decided to go to all of the trouble of torturing him with box cutters and blow torches. Like, that is like personal. That's like, I want to stick around for a while and like make you suffer in pain. Like that is a personal attack, I feel like. Not an expert, because I know people are going to come for me. She talks like she knows what she's talking about. Okay. Well, who doesn't?
I cannot with our attitudes. Like, Liz, you're not welcome here. We flamed you. Everyone that comes for us, we are like out on just the human population today.
Yeah, today is a weird day.
It is. I feel so grumpy. And now this guy. This guy has the audacity to show up here on a Monday evening.
No kidding. But also, okay, also the biggest thing, why only zip tie half his body to the chair? Like,
yeah, but don't get me started on the zip tie. Why even use, like, what is that?
To me, it's the most ridiculous part of the whole thing, because there's only one reason an intruder would zip tie half your body, because there is no intruder. And once you've zip tied your own hand, it's impossible to zip tie your other hand.
Sounds a lot like someone that zip tied themselves to the chair.
But, okay. Or,
I only brought two.
Let's pretend like this story isn't wildly ridiculous, and we're going to go along with Rick's story, because you have to, right? As investigators, you have to try and corroborate his story, look into it, see where the evidence leads you.
But why don't they ever do that themselves? Like, before, why aren't they like, okay, let me think through how this would go? The like, murderer. They're like, okay, I'm going to murder my wife, and then I'm going to zip tie myself to a chair. Let me try doing that first. Oh, it doesn't work.
I do a run through. If I have a doctor's appointment somewhere I'm unfamiliar with, I'm driving by the building the day before. Like,
I'm walking the college campus with the map. Okay. I need to know where my glasses are. I think I'm about to risk my whole life on
this intruder story. Zip ties? As if you're not going to be the number one suspect as the husband. But then I always think about that couple with the wetsuit intruder, and they were telling the truth. So, you know, I mean, wilder stories have been true. Though I think that their story sounded more plausible, but, you know.
Yeah, theirs was weird, though, too. But But well, one of them wasn't murdered, and then one of them was, like, barely hurt. Do you know what I mean? Right?
He was stabbed and blowtorched, MoGab, so... But barely hurt. I mean, he was released. No, he was released that day.
That day.
Later that day, Anyone that knows me knows I'm obsessed with hair care and more recently skincare. But it is so overwhelming. It's hard to even know where to begin. And I hear about all these custom beauty products promising to fix my dry hair and scalp, my damaged ends. But then I find out that after you take some quiz to get it personalized, it turns out they're just sending you some pre-made formula that's not actually personalized. Well, that is not the case with Pros. Pros is here to make all your hair care and skincare wants and needs so easy. And it's actually personalized. Each and every bottle of Pros custom hair and skincare is made to order and personalized with a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs. Nothing is pre-mixed and straight off the shelf, and it's actually effective. In a third-party, double-blind, dermatologist-supervised, controlled clinical study, aka the gold standard in research studies, Pros proved that personalization works better than products straight off the shelf. You can try it for yourself and get your healthiest hair in 30 days or get your money back. In fact, Pros is so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering our listeners an exclusive trial offer so that you can see the difference that custom care can make. 50% off your first subscription order at pros.com/creepers. That's PROSE.com/creepers for your free consultation and 50% off of your one-of-a-kind formula. Pros.com/creepers. Life doesn't happen biweekly, so why should payday? The money you've already earned can be in your hands today with EarnIn. I don't know about you, but I've been in that situation where I have a bill due Tuesday, but payday isn't until Friday. I've already earned the money, I've worked the hours, but because I have to wait on payroll, I'm now risking getting slapped with a late fee. But my options aren't great. I could pay with a credit card that has a high interest rate, or worse, get a payday loan that comes with steep fees and high interest. But now there's a much needed alternative out there with EarnIn. EarnIn is a way to access the money you've already earned that you might need before payday hits. It isn't an advance or a payday loan, no high interest rates, no steep fees. They're helping millions of Americans to feel self-sufficient without falling into debt traps. And it's so easy to use. Just download the EarnIn app and verify your paycheck, then access up to $100 a day as you work and leave an optional tip. Any money you access plus tips are automatically repaid from your next paycheck. Download EarnIn today, spelled E-A-R-N-I-N, in the Google Play or Apple App Store. When you download the EarnIn app, type in Creepers under podcast when you sign up. It'll really help the show. Creepers under podcast. Subject to your available earnings, location, daily max, and pay period max. See earnin.com/TOS for details. EarnIn is a financial technology company, not a bank. Bank products are issued by Evolve Bank & Trust, member FDIC. Oh, that's not all Rick told detectives either.
Ooh, of course not.
Okay, so he also mentioned this teeny weeny detail that he thought might be relevant to the case. Don't worry, it's not an affair. Nothing like that. Yes, it was another woman. And yes, she was pregnant with his baby, like very, very pregnant. But you see what had happened was.
Usher Sarah, wrote a song about that.
Yeah, Sarah Ganser, the mother-to-be, she was a close friend of Rick's. They'd known each other since junior high, and she'd recently gotten divorced, and this was just really devastating to her because what she wanted more than anything was a child. So she'd gone to Rick and Connie and asked if they'd help. You know, she wanted to see if they'd donate sperm so she could conceive. But it turns out that she couldn't afford to be inseminated, so the method of donating the sperm was going to have to be a little more biblical.
It's weird. That's not really like a donation per se.
But don't worry. It was all above board. Rick said, in a way, this had all been Connie's idea. Okay.
Oh, I bet. It's weird she's not there to talk about it, though.
Yeah. In another article, it said that it was Connie who had wanted the baby, but she couldn't. So they had discussed using a surrogate, but it was cheaper for Rick to just go the traditional route. So I'm not sure which story he actually told or if it was a mixture of both, but either way, ridiculous.
Let me be clear. I don't let me be clear to all my girlfriends, okay? It ain't happening. It's not flying. I'm over here worried about this otter card in the desk drawer, which, by the way, I didn't get for Valentine's Day, for those keeping track at home.
Okay, otter card update.
It's still sitting in the desk drawer. So you think I'm about to let my man go help my friend out in that manner? I don't think so.
You wouldn't be okay with that? You wouldn't be cool?
And I get that I'm a little unhinged because I almost cried in a Panera today. But I think even the more emotionally stable folk would agree as well.
Well, and I think maybe saying it out loud, Rick also realized how ridiculous that sounded. Okay. So he kind of like backtracked a little bit in this conversation. And he was like, okay, there was cheating in the beginning. I don't really know what he means by in the beginning of what. And yeah, Sarah getting pregnant, that was unexpected. Not this totally pre-planned surrogate situation. He admitted it was unexpected. He said it popped up like a freaking soap opera.
Yep.
That was something Rick did a lot in this interview, actually. He'd change details of his story as he retold the story again and again. Details that should have been firm. Like, you know, I get it. You're going to like forget things or remember things differently. But you'd think he would remember whether or not he actually saw Connie get shot. And the first time he told the story, he told detectives that he'd only heard the gunshots. And he said he knows he heard the gunfire at least once, but it could have been twice. That's what he said. But then a minute later, when detectives asked him if he'd actually seen the intruder shoot his wife, he said yes.
I could understand, like, mixing up how you hear the gunshot, like if the gunshot went off once or twice. I've never, like, I've been through some traumatic
things. Yeah, I could like not. Sounds. Yeah, totally.
Not with like guns, but like I could see that. But you definitely know.
That image is saying, in your brain.
Yeah, I'm not even saying like the fine details, like which way they were facing, but you know whether or not you saw your wife got shot. I'm not saying you remember what she said or what she was wearing or which way she was facing. Sure. But you know if you saw that or not.
Yeah, and then later, he said that he didn't even know at that point if she'd been shot at all. And it's he's responding. So they're at, like, it's not just him telling the story. Sometimes it's him telling the story. Sometimes it's detectives asking clarifying questions. Like, so did you see her get shot? And he'd be like, yes. So he's like answering their questions differently than what he just told the story.
I'm not sure. He's like very like definitive. Like, yes.
Yeah. And then here in this interview, he told police that Sarah was expecting him to get divorced from Connie. She was expecting this divorce. But later said that there was no pressure from Sarah to get divorced. Getting a consistent story from him was not happening. And the timeline Rick was giving was also not really making sense to detectives. He said he'd gotten home around 9 a.m. And remember, he said that he'd been on his way to work that day when he turned around to get his laptop. So he'd have a pretty good idea of what time that was, like what time he went to work. And then he knew about how far away. So he'd know about when he got home. Mm-hmm. He said he was only in the house for about 5 minutes with the intruder when he heard the garage door coming up and Connie walked inside, and then everything happened really quickly. The chase down the stairs, Connie's murder, Rick being attacked. But the problem with this timeline is that Rick did not call 911 until 10:19. So there's about an hour, give or take, of lost time that his story left unaccounted.
Right. Like what's happening in between that time?
Right. Like, he should have been calling the police closer to, like, 9:30 at the latest, mm-hmm. maybe 9:40, if you're really going to give him the benefit of the doubt. But that call wasn't until 10:19.
I just also, I'm not ever bothered. The second you were like, he forgot his laptop and he turned around and that's when there's an intruder. I've definitely forgot my laptop when I used to commute and would have to turn around and get it. The odds of it being when your home is being invaded, very, very, very rare. Very odd. Just that alone. I'm like, you just happened to like, oh, I forgot my laptop. Oh, this alarm's going off. Oh, I'm going to go home and like, what?
Right. And then also, then you're getting all of these alerts. Like, yeah.
Wouldn't it have been smarter? Obviously, I don't agree with any of this. Wouldn't it have been smarter for him to have killed his wife? Mm-hmm. Like early in the morning, whatever, or, you know, gone to work. And then he comes home and he's like, this obviously happened. Like, why would you place yourself there?
So I think it's because he didn't want the kids at home. So had to wait until after they got on the bus to go to school. And then Connie had a workout class that she like left for, I guess, as they were taking the kids to the bus. Then she left for her workout class. We'll talk about this later. Her workout class actually was canceled. And so she came home earlier than he was expecting her. And I think that might have had something to do with his plan getting rushed a little bit also.
When was this? What year? Was this recently?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was...
like in the like last 20 years.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Not like the 90s. Okay.
This was 2015.
Oh, that's right. Okay. Which was still almost just... 10 years. In 2 years, that'll be 10 years ago.
Can you believe that? 2015?
No. God. 2015 was like
yesterday.
Yesterday. Truly.
I know.
Why is time going so fast?
But none of this was enough to take Rick to trial for murder. He could just be a cheating asshole with a bad memory. So
yeah, we have those.
Yeah. So investigators were going to have to keep digging. Rick told his dad that day as they were leaving the hospital that he knew that the police thought he did this. And so Rick's family was concerned that detectives had tunnel vision on him. It was certainly a much easier job for them if Rick did it than having to track down this elusive intruder. So his parents told him that he had to stop talking to the police, and they hired a good defense attorney, one of the top defense attorneys in the state, actually. But was it tunnel vision, or was that just where the evidence was leading detectives? Because first off, nothing at the crime scene seemed to support Rick's story of what happened. If this was an intruder that had been caught mid-burglary, why was the house not more disturbed? You'd expect to see rooms tossed, at the very least the master bedroom where the intruder was supposedly found in. But even in the closet where Rick said he'd found the intruder, you could see like a big tray full of Connie's jewelry right out in the open, completely undisturbed. Like there was nothing
Yeah, he ransacked. Said he was like digging through the closet even.
Yeah, there was nothing like ransacked in that closet. Dumb. Back at the crime scene, the major crime squad was going over that house top to bottom, dusting for fingerprints, swabbing for DNA, photographing the entire scene. They found a window open in the basement as well as the basement door, and they thought that could have been where the intruder could have entered and exited. They also called out a canine unit to try and pick up the scent of the intruder.
Oh, I love a good canine unit. Yeah. You know that.
Oh, yeah. They took the good boy to the basement door at the back of the house where they thought that the intruder had exited. And right away, the dog was able to pick up a scent, which he followed outside through the door for about 5 feet to a wallet that was lying in the grass almost right outside the basement door.
Shut up. What a good boy.
What a good boy. The intruder had stolen this wallet, hadn't gotten very far with it. Which, lucky for Rick, he didn't even have to go through all the hassle of, like, replacing his driver's license and such.
That's the worst part. Like,
truly. The dog had his head down, sniffing, sniffing, sniffing. He was on the case.
What kind of dog?
German Shepherd. I don't actually know, but I'm sure it was a German Shepherd. The trooper expected him to follow the scent into the woods that surrounded this house. Because remember, this is all, like, a wooded area. It's, like, really beautiful. Mm-hmm. Expected the dog to follow the scent into the woods, as you would expect an intruder to leave, you know, into the woods and disappear. Goodbye.
Not Richard.
But the dog sniff, sniff, sniffed all the way around the house and back to the front door, as if the intruder had run out the basement door and then gone around the house to run right back inside the front door.
Okay.
That was weird.
Yeah.
It got even weirder when the dog went right to the spot where Rick had been lying on the kitchen floor when he'd been found.
Yeah, that's a problem.
They found Rick's bag of tools that all appeared to have blood on them, and they also found a revolver on the floor of the basement that they thought was probably the murder weapon. On Connie's body, they found her cell phone in her pocket and her Fitbit tracker clipped to her waistband. And they took both of them and bagged them as evidence, not knowing that they might have just blown this whole case wide open. But more on that later.
No, more on that now. Now. Was it the Fitbit?
We're telling this in chronological order, all right?
This is ridiculous.
So police were suspicious, but there wasn't enough to support any theory just yet. And there wasn't anything, this was the biggest holdup. There was nothing in Rick's background that would show that he was capable of something like this. No history of domestic violence, no history of anything. He had nothing on his background report. And when they got the forensics report back from the scene, they saw that there had been unidentified DNA in 6 different key places, including the master bedroom closet, and the safe where the gun was kept down in the basement, even the gun itself. The inside of Rick's shirt showed that same unidentified DNA, as did the hatch door in the basement that Rick said the intruder had left through. And all of these points match Rick's story. Wherever he said the intruder was, whatever he said the intruder had touched, there was this unidentified DNA. And I do have to clarify something. I am not totally sure that all of this unidentified DNA matched. I couldn't find anything.
If it's like one person's unidentified, or if it's like 3 different.
Right. Ones. I'm assuming that it was one person's, like, one sample of unidentified DNA that was like the same, but I'm not certain of that.
Okay. Well, what I am certain of is you did your little, what? That would be crazy. When I was like, oh, it's definitely the husband. And now if it's truly not, you've like really swindled me here. But if it is someone other than him, it's definitely someone that he like hired or came and like licked all the doorknobs or whatever. Like.
Yeah.
Okay. Because that would
explain a lot of it. That
like he had a person. Like, he's involved still, but there's someone else.
There's no way he was zip-tied to half the chair. Who's doing that?
He tried to zip-tie his neck. I mean,
the guy had a gun. The intruder had a gun that he just shot Connie with. But I'm saying, like, the intruder had a gun that he just shot somebody with. Why is he then throwing the gun down? The gun was found in the basement on the floor. Why is he throwing... I guess maybe Rick got it out of him, but Look, maybe Rick fought the gun off, but then he's grabbing a box of... Oh, wait, they're in the basement, though. This whole time, they're in the... I forget that he walked up the stairs with the chair on his back.
Oh, he was in the basement, not in the kitchen? Because I'm thinking, why didn't he just run out of the house?
He was in the basement. Oh. He had run down after the intruder. That's when he, like, maybe saw Connie get shot, maybe not.
Yeah.
And then the intruder zip-tied him to a folding chair that was in the basement. But the gun, why drop the gun? It was found on the floor of the basement. Why do that and then zip-tie him to a chair to, like, go through this box of tools like a creepy serial killer and go through each tool one by one and stab him and blowtorch him? And he wasn't even badly injured. And then he managed to get the blowtorch, he says. This is his story. He gets the blowtorch, away and starts blowtorching the guy and, like, thinks maybe he got his mask. And that's when the intruder ran off, and he ran off through that hatch in the basement, he thinks.
Why do you even have that? Why do you even have that, my man?
A hatch in the basement or a blowtorch?
A blowtorch.
I have no idea. Man. What would you need a blowtorch for? Why do they exist?
Creme brulee. That's it. That's the only reason.
I can't think of blowtorches without thinking of this scene in Hostel that I'm not going to tell you about. But everybody that's seen Hostel knows what I'm talking about. And it'll live in my head rent-free for the rest of my life. And I saw that movie probably 20 years ago. So that's why I don't watch scary movies.
He's just, like, toasting the top of little creme brulees.
That's what's happening in Hostel. Yep, just toasting the top of the creme brulees with the blowtorch.
That's the only thing you need it for, obviously.
Oh, obviously. So investigators started canvassing the neighborhood, looking for witnesses, and they weren't super hopeful that they'd find anyone. This was in the middle of the day on a regular workday for most people. But still, they thought they might find someone who had seen something. And they didn't end up finding any eyewitnesses. But through their interviews, they did hear that the DeBates might have had some bad blood with someone. They'd hired a contractor to do some work on the house, and Rick hadn't been happy with the work that had been done. He'd told friends that he was worried the contractor would break into the house, and Connie had told friends that there had been a lot of arguments and that they might be suing this contractor.
You're not coming in your house, and I don't know. I mean, maybe weirder things have happened, but I just don't feel like you're, like, leaving them a bad Yelp Google review because you don't like the way they painted the exterior of your house and they're, like, coming in and killing your wife, you know?
I feel like this is a pretty common occurrence. People hire contractors and then they are upset with the work that's done or not done. Like, I hear about that happening all the time. It's happened to probably everybody I know that is a homeowner and has ever had to hire a contractor for anything. They have had a bad experience at some point with somebody, mainly because of timelines. Like, they just don't get the work done in the time expected, or the cost ends up going up because of certain things. Like,
they paint the outside of your house while you were on vacation and it wasn't actually the person's house to paint. Do you remember that? That was rent-free in my head.
That was a story from one of our mini creeps, our bad neighbor's mini creep.
Rent-free in my brain. Like, the audacity. And those people didn't get murdered. You know what I mean? Like,
you're right. Yeah, because I don't know. They had normal people living by them. Yeah.
That just feels like a stretch to me is all I'm saying. But I'm not saying it doesn't happen or couldn't happen. I just feel like that's not my...
Well, and Rick told police that they did take the contractor to small claims court because he'd taken some of their money and it had gotten really bad. And things actually seemed to be getting worse in the weeks leading up to Connie's murder. There were towels found in the muffler of one of their cars, which, according to Cora, can kill your engine in about a minute. I don't know what a muffler in your car is going to do, but nothing good, I guess. It's not going to kill you, though. I looked into that. It will not kill you.
Wait, but won't it if your car – isn't that one of the things, like, when people try – their car is parked –
on the Google, which I'm not gonna, I didn't vet my sources here. A lot of it was forums. Okay.
You hear that, Liz?
People said that it would take, like, a crazy amount of time for that to happen. It wouldn't just, and you would notice it. Like,
I was just thinking, was he trying to do that a different way? Like, if he was trying to kill his wife a different way before? Like, if he.
Well, Rick is not a very smart person, it seems like. So maybe he would have thought that. Maybe he didn't read the same forums that I did that said that that is not a good way to kill somebody.
It doesn't seem like he's vetting his sources. He's doing no trial runs.
I don't know. Maybe so.
No trial runs. Like
a week after that, they came out of their house to find that their windshield of their car had been smashed. And they were sure that it was this contractor. His name's Ken Sweeney. And all of the DeBates' friends, family, and neighbors, they all said the same thing, too, that this must have been the contractor. And when they heard about what happened, that was the first thought to everyone that was close to the DeBates. And it also made Rick's story make a little more sense, like why he would have wanted to, like, torture Rick. Because if Rick's story is true, that's such a personal thing. Like, you're going to want to... You would have to have some sort of personal connection. That wouldn't just be a random guy.
Yeah, so if like this, trying to get out of there fast.
Yeah, so this contractor is like, oh, I killed Connie and now I want to like really make Rick suffer for what he did to me. It doesn't explain why he'd only zip tie one half of his body, but...
Yeah, someone explain that, please.
Yeah.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
So investigators went to talk to this contractor, Ken Sweeney, and Ken told police that he'd been hired to do some work on their bathroom, but that as the project went on, it seemed like the things that the DeBates wanted done weren't aligning with the price, so he had backed out of the job, and he said they ended up settling it all in small claims for a couple of $1,000s. And the more investigators looked into Ken, the more it seemed like he hadn't done this. When they pulled his background report, they didn't see anything that indicated a history of violence, especially not to this magnitude. Like, this would be 0 to 60.
Right.
If it's just, like, a dispute over a contractor and a couple $1,000s a small claims court, like...
Right. You're not going to ruin your whole business, your whole life, you know, like...
Yeah. And he also had a pretty good alibi. He was at another job site that morning. And he also didn't really fit Rick's description of the intruder. He wasn't a big guy.
God, Rick, you're so dumb.
Nor did he sound like Vin Diesel. This guy did not sound like Vin Diesel.
It's just like, why wouldn't you? If you're going to try and line it up, tee it up so it could be this contractor, wouldn't you instead say, like, you know, he sounded like Vin Diesel? I think it might have been our contractor. It sounded just like him, even though I couldn't see his face.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know.
Maybe he didn't want to make it that specific because he didn't take the time to check if Ken was going to have an alibi for that day.
Oh,
Lord. The police, like the investigators, photographed Ken's hands and his face and his body, and they didn't see any indication that he'd even been in a struggle. And this is like the day of the attack or the next day.
Right.
This didn't totally let Ken off the hook. He could have had someone else break into the house and commit the attacks. But it was definitely enough to look down other avenues. So 2 days after Connie's murder, it was Christmas. And Connie's family wanted to have some kind of Christmas celebration for the sake of her two boys. And so Rick and the boys were staying at Rick's parents' house. So Connie's family, which is like her sister and her brother, they went over to Rick's parents' house to give their Christmas presents to the boys. And it was really hard and it was really emotional. Connie's sister, she said that she was really put off by Rick's demeanor at this Christmas celebration. He didn't seem sad. He didn't seem emotional. He was cracking jokes and acting like everything is normal.
Ew.
Yeah. And then 3 days later, he tried to cash in on Connie's life insurance policy.
How are we still doing that?
A $475,000 policy. I feel like that's really high. Like, I don't know.
I'm thinking.
Like, I don't know.
I mean, not for two kids, I don't feel like.
You don't? Okay.
I don't know. I'm obviously not that much of an adult.
Well, and you might, well, I know me either. Well, and you might say, well, it's normal for a married couple with kids to have life insurance. And sure it is. I totally agree with that. But Rick had stopped paying on his policy 2 years earlier and had only been paying on hers.
This stuff comes out. Like,
Right. Every time, whatever you do with life insurance or a will or in your investment or what 401k, whatever, the it's going to come out.
They're going to
when
find
you
out.
Murder your spouse.
They're going to know.
Every time.
They're going to know.
They look at that.
You know what I have determined from doing 109 of these? That it is absolutely impossible to plan the perfect murder. The only murderers who don't get caught get lucky. It is not because of some sophisticated plan of theirs that they didn't get caught. Their DNA wasn't found because it was left, probably.
It's not even that they get lucky. It's that the investigation was botched or... Like, it's almost never...
A lot of times... Well, a lot of times the investigation was botched. But sometimes the investigation was, like, you know, decent or even good, but there just isn't evidence to be found.
Yeah.
But it's not because that's not because this person was some, like, magical, like, murderer. It's because they got lucky. They didn't leave behind DNA. But, like, that was luck. You know, I just... Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, there's no way to plan the perfect murder, so quit murdering people. The end.
Quit murdering people. I've been
and
saying that
certainly
for a long time.
Don't be trying to file the life insurance claim 3 days later, you overeager
trash.
Son of a bitch. The insurance company denied his claim, and then later he withdrew. And I don't know why they denied his claim. I don't know if it was because of this ongoing investigation or like why. But later, he'd withdraw almost $100,000 from an investment account that belonged to Connie. A few days after Christmas, a wake was held. The day was ugly. The weather was horrible. But hundreds of people showed up for Connie. She was very much loved and very much missed. Connie's best friends, the other two musketeers, Darlene and Peggy, they went to the funeral and said that they waited in a three-hour-long line to pay their respects to the family. And when they got to Rick and went to express their condolences, he asked them how they knew Connie, which they found very odd. And in the moment, they thought maybe he was just in shock or just out of it because
he... Wait, they know he knows them?
Yeah, he definitely knew who they were.
He hangs out with them.
Like in the days after Connie's murder, he'd text them things like, hey, neighbor, where do you get takeout? Which they also thought was really weird. And... Yeah. Though he'd talked to them over text message, if they saw him in person, he'd basically, like, run away. Like, he was trying to avoid them. That was their, like, interpretation of certain instances. They also noticed that he didn't appear to have a scratch on him. No bruising that they could see. Like, nothing. And this was less than a week after the attack. A few days after the memorial, her funeral was held, and Connie's friends noticed more strange behavior from Rick. Her friend Kim was one of the last people to arrive at the gravesite for the burial, and by the time she got there, Rick had already left, and she thought that was weird that he would leave. Connie's sister Donna thought it was weird that Rick left in the middle of the reception after the burial. He just like...
Yeah, you're the last one there every time.
Yeah.
How does he thinking this like pregnant woman, I forgot her name, but the baby, how is that going to go down? Like, is that child going to be introduced to his, like... Is he going to be with her? Is he
he had some decisions to make for sure when it came to the baby. Personally, these instances, the funeral, the memorial, I don't hold any of this against Rick, like, isolated. Like, if it was just that, I'm not holding that against him. That's not evidence to me. Rick was described by several different people as quirky, and sometimes people described as quirky don't behave the way that you would expect them to behave. A lot of times they are what you would call weird. And behavior after a loved one has been murdered should never be analyzed this closely because people behave
unless
differently.
Unless you murdered them. Like, unless you murdered them and then you're acting
definitely,
weird.
Definitely, like, yes, you have to back it up with other evidence to support any suspicions. Because I'm thinking, like, maybe he'd just been greeting people for 3 hours and, like, at that wake, receiving all of these condolences one after the other. And maybe he'd just, like, gotten a script down at that point. Like,
right.
I mean, I couldn't imagine standing there for 3 hours while people told me they were sorry for my loss over and over and over again. I think I would just have it like in my head, like not even looking at the person, like, oh, how did you know my wife? Like, whatever.
Yeah.
Maybe his kids were cold at the burial and they'd been standing by that grave for hours and it was sad and he was ready to go. And maybe he was tired at the reception. I know if my partner died young and unexpectedly while I had two kids to raise, I would probably be hiding in a bedroom for most of the reception until everyone left, except for maybe the few people that I actually wanted around me. Maybe most of those people aren't his support system. They're hers. Yeah. And they're grieving and he's grieving and it's a lot. Or maybe his suspicious behavior means something. But my point is, you can't really tell. You can't tell if it means something or if it's like not anything. So
well,
you
I'm
have
over here
to
being judgy as all get out.
Well, and you can be judgy, but you just have to take it with a grain of salt without other evidence to back up your suspicions. I mean, if you have other evidence, right, then you can put it all together and be like, look, this all happened and he was being weird and doing this. But his behavior made everybody suspicious. He was throwing parties at his house. He was going out to bars. He was having a good time. The town rumor mill started up and everyone started pointing the finger at Rick. Basically, open and shut case at this point. But despite all these weird instances, her closest friends still refused to believe that Rick could be capable of killing Connie. He'd always been so loving, a doting husband. He was the best husband on the block, is what they said. The kind that would tell her to sit down at a party while he made her a plate. They were all impressed with that. So guys out there, my God, the way to a woman's heart. Tell her to sit down. He'll make you a, I'll make you a plate. Man, they were impressed.
Wow. Okay.
But he would like rub her shoulders and he would reach out to her friends. This I do think is impressive. Okay. He would reach out to her friends when she was having a bad day and like ask them to like take her out for drinks and make her feel better. But then I'm also like, maybe he just didn't want to deal with it.
Yeah, that's fair.
You know,
but then it's weird to then ask the friends, like, how did you know my wife? But you're right. I think that maybe that was like a rote like response, but just bizarre.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that is what happened. He's like not even paying attention to who he's talking to. He's just like, okay, and how did you know
panicked,
my wife?
Because he knows all those people are there because he murdered her.
Oh, God, you're right. Maybe like, that I'd is be- what's... Oh.
He's like, oh my God, I'm gonna get caught.
I don't know how you stand there for 3 hours and go through that and not just totally break down when you're responsible for that. Not saying that he is. Okay, story's not over, but...
That look.
This is a murder mystery. This is a murder mystery.
I think mystery is, no.
So her friends are like, no way could he have killed her. He loved her, obviously. But then they found out about the affair and the baby on the way and the fact that Rick had tried to pass it off as Connie's idea that Rick gets Sarah pregnant.
That's offensive.
And they were like, okay, we are so over this guy. He did it. But months went by and more months and more months. Mm. And soon it was a year after the murder with no arrests and no answers. The community was pretty shaken up, of course, like a potential murderer was on the loose. And that was terrifying for people not as like close that think that this is like an intruder.
Yeah,
that
someone
you know?
Just like broken and yeah.
But over the course of this year, almost one by one, every single one of Connie's friends and family began to believe that Rick was the murderer. Things just were not adding up to them. A vigil was held for Connie on the anniversary of her murder. Friends spoke about her and they sang her favorite song, which was Somewhere Over the Rainbow.
So wait, like a year later, we're now at the vigil and still, okay. Still nothing.
She was still very much missed and they all wanted justice for Connie. They were frustrated at the lack of progress with the investigation. But no answers did not mean that investigators weren't still on the case. They'd cleared Ken Sweeney, the contractor. His alibi was solid, and there was just no evidence that he was involved in this at all. But there was evidence leading them toward Rick, and a year on, that's who their main focus was on. Their strongest evidence in Connie's murder was in all of the electronic evidence that they'd collected. This is Facebook accounts, alarm records, cell phone data, downloads, surveillance cameras, Connie's Fitbit. Mm-hmm. there were text messages between Rick and Connie. Like, just a month before her murder, she's like sending him sexy lingerie pictures while he's over texting with Sarah about how he and Connie are on the same page about getting divorced, but that it was going to be a slow-moving divorce to make it easier on the kids.
Nothing makes things easier on children when you just drag it out as long as possible.
Right. Putting all of this electronic evidence together allowed them to make a timeline of Connie's last day. And so they just kind of walked through her day. And they saw that the first thing that she did when she woke up that morning was she messaged some friends. And then she got up and she got dressed in her workout clothes and she clipped her Fitbit on her waistband, which recorded when she moved and how many steps she put in that day. And she started getting the kids ready for school. And then she got in her car to drive to the YMCA to take a workout class there. She was taking a spin class.
Same girl.
She was on surveillance cameras arriving at the Y, but she didn't stay long because when she got there, she realized her class had been canceled. So she left and went straight back home. And as she left the YMCA, she shot off a message on Facebook to a psychotherapist asking for a hypnosis appointment because, quote, there's a lot going on right now. So aww. She wasn't happy.
Yeah.
She got home around 9:20, and if Rick's story was true, this would be when the intruder would have heard her come in the house. He would have run down the stairs, chased her into the basement, and shot her, all within about 5 minutes of her getting home. But what they saw on the Fitbit didn't align with that story. They saw her walking all over the house for a whole nother hour, posting stuff on Facebook, sending messages to friends.
Oh, no.
All from the debate home IP address. So it's not like these are messages she's sending at the Y and they're just getting their time wrong. It was all from the home IP address until 10:05 that morning. That's when it all stops, including her Fitbit steps, which is also about 14 minutes before he made that phone call to 911.
Yeah, like he doesn't even have the times.
Oof. Right.
Like, You didn't even try.
It's like, you know the timeline. Why didn't you just make it fit the actual timeline?
I'm glad he didn't, but I'm annoyed.
I guess because if it was the actual timeline, then this intruder, like, would have had to break in while they were there for his story to. But that could have happened. The intruder could have broken in while he was there.
Anyway, so...
Rick's story also differed from his own electronic footprint. He'd told police that he'd left that morning to go to work and then turned back around when he realized he'd forgotten his laptop. But his electronic data showed that he'd never left the property that day at all.
Yeah, like, does he not think that they're going to see that? Hello? Your cell phone didn't ping anywhere else?
Right. He also said that on his way home, his home alarm had been going off. So from his phone, like, he'd pulled over. And from his phone, he'd shot an email off to his boss letting him know that he was going to be late. Records showed that that email was sent from his laptop at home.
Also, if my alarm is going off, there's an intruder, I'm not pulling over to send my boss an email. I'll deal with that after the fact.
Well, and his alarm wasn't going off because the data also showed that there was no alarm gone off at that time.
The alarm literally alerts the police. You didn't think they were going to check that?
Yeah, I know. After he sent that email to his boss, which he sent from his home, from his laptop at home, he got onto the YMCA website to check the group exercise schedule, which is why I think he got thrown off when she came back early, because I think he was checking what time she was going to be home, because he was checking that exercise schedule. Then he searched the ESPN website for the Mike and Mike show, and that was all he did on the computer. And that was around 9:20 in the morning. So he certainly didn't walk in, hear something upstairs, go upstairs to check it out, and
he's
messing around on his computer. It wasn't until 10:11 that the panic alarm for the security system was set off, and it was set off from the fob on his keychain. Like, he set it off himself from his keychain.
Yeah.
That was the only time that that panic alarm went off that morning at all. At 10:16, state police got called from the alarm company. And then at 10:20, Rick made that 911 call to police.
So that's what he's saying. He's been home, and then he's setting the timeline into motion after he's already been there. He's going to hit the panic alarm. He's going to make the phone call. And that to him is when it's starting.
Mm-hmm. But he's like pushing it up an hour.
Right.
As if you can't tell when that stuff happened.
Right.
This tells police that Rick was home that morning, and after she got home from the Y, he spent the next hour working up the courage to lure her down to the basement and shoot her. And then he staged the scene, including his own attack, which was all superficial wounds.
Terrible job.
Yeah, all superficial wounds. They also found other evidence of trouble in their marriage. Like, they found a note in Connie's phone from a year before the murder titled, "Why I Want a Divorce." And it was a whole list of things. Like, that he takes money from a lot of accounts that don't belong to him, that he's an unfit parent, that he's uncaring towards her, that he doesn't come home on time, that he acts like a kid constantly. I mean, these are like, I don't know, these are like very childish, immature things, not like violent, you know, right. But
annoying, but yeah, not like where I'd be like, you need to get out of there now.
Like, you know? She's feeling like she's his mother, kind of, right. You know. The day before she was killed, Connie sent Rick angry texts about how she just had to spend 2 hours on the phone with Comcast, which is a internet company for our overseas people, to find out why their bill doubled, only to find out that it was because he'd added sports channels to the package.
Oh, I was like, dirty movies. Oh, yeah.
Sports. Okay. She accuses him in these text messages of lying and says that once again, she's had to clean up his mess. And her last text to him told him to have a great day off and merry effing Christmas.
That's what you want.
And that is right before, like, the day before she's texting her therapist to get a hypnosis appointment because she's got a lot going on right now. And then it was Good Friday 2017, almost a year and a half since Connie's murder, when investigators finally went to arrest Rick. There were so many police cars at the house that it looked very similar to the day that Connie had been murdered. They arrested Rick and charged him with Connie's murder. His sons went to live with Connie's older sister, and Rick's family was totally devastated. They didn't believe for a second that he'd done this. They had total faith in his story about the intruder. And to them, the way they saw it, Rick had now lost everything. His wife, his kids, his job. And now potentially his freedom, and they were really scared.
I do feel so bad for those families because I imagine you do really believe, like, if I'm his, like, mom or aunt or whatever, I'm believing that, like,
I'm not thinking there's even an option that he murdered her.
Right.
Like, I'm not, even if his story isn't fitting, I believe him. I'm believing him if I'm his family member.
And I do always feel bad for, like, the, unless they've cause some, like, childhood trauma to them, you know, but, like,
right.
The parents that then, like, they go to work and your son's a murderer and it's all over the news, you know, and it's like
Scott Peterson's poor mom that just got, like, so harassed. It was terrible. Right.
And it's like, you didn't, I don't know.
She didn't.
And then, of course, these boys, I'm like, okay, so not only was their mom murdered, but then they were murdered by their dad. So they basically have no parents, you know, like, they're, how do they reconcile that?
Ugh. Yeah.
And for what? So you can have an affair? Like, just get a divorce.
Just get a divorce. Like, just get a divorce. It's very confusing. I mean, I'm sure there was, like, financial motivations as well and, you know, things like that. But
I know it's not that easy. I know I'm oversimplifying it. But, like, I'm also not, you know? Like, there's other options than just, like, murdering your wife when you...
Yeah. Murder should not be it's not an option. So get that one out of your head and figure out a solution to your problem. Own up to your mistakes.
Insert BetterHelp ad. Murder is not an option.
Yeah.
Seek help.
And his family had every reason to be scared because investigators and the DA's office had spent the last year and a half building a case that they thought they would win. They had the affair, the baby, the inconsistent stories, the electronics evidence. But now they also had witnesses. They had the few people that Rick had told about Sarah and the baby, who all told investigators that Rick had been really concerned about a divorce. A divorce to Rick meant that he would lose his friends and his family, and that he was feeling a lot of pressure about that in the weeks leading up to the murder. And it was looking like Rick started to see Connie as an obstacle in his path and that murdering her would solve the problem. But yeah. Look how that turned out for you. But for years, the trial kept getting pushed back and pushed back. For 3 years, Connie's family and friends. I am not sure why. I am thinking he had one of the top defense attorneys in the state that kept finding reasons to delay.
Got it.
And so for 3 years, Connie's family and friends had to deal with Rick being out on bail while they kept waiting and waiting for the trial to start. And I'm sure they just started to wonder if it would ever even happen, if he'd ever be held accountable for this. And finally, they started to assemble a jury, and the family was so relieved. Finally. But that was in March of 2020 is when that trial date was set.
Oh, no.
So obviously COVID happened. Everything shut down. So more years went by. Rick's attorney even passed away during this time. So that pushed them back even further.
Yeah, like, what do you do about that? You gotta get a whole new team.
He didn't have to get a whole new team, luckily. He had, like, a partner guy that took over as, like, lead for him. But finally, in April of 2022, so just this past April.
Yesterday.
Mm-hmm. The trial went on. And a key part of the defense's strategy at trial would be to show that the police had made their minds up about Rick from the very beginning and sought evidence to prove his guilt instead of looking for evidence, you know. The DA, Matthew Gdansky, he planned to point out that the only thing pointing police toward Rick was all the concrete evidence that kept pointing his way.
I agree.
He put state troopers on the stand to talk about how the crime scene looked staged, how the dogs tracked Rick's scent and only Rick's scent, and pointed out all the holes in Rick's story. And they also had a very compelling motive, a very pregnant girlfriend. They put Sarah Ganser on the stand, who testified that even before she was pregnant, Rick had talked about divorcing Connie. But she testified that Rick didn't seem under pressure to get a divorce, that she hadn't been pressuring him to get a divorce, that she wasn't looking to break up a family. She had told him that it was completely up to him if she even puts his name on the birth certificate. And that if he had said the word, no one would have ever even known that he was the father.
Oh my gosh.
The state thought Sarah's testimony would help their case, but it seemed to help the defense's case more. It certainly wasn't the rock-solid motive that the state had thought that it was.
Right.
Next, the state brings up all the electronic data that they said proved that Rick never left the property that day. And yeah, that Connie,
that's my favorite part.
Mm-hmm. And that Connie was alive for almost an hour longer than Rick said she was. Rick said he'd gotten back home before Connie, that he'd heard her coming in the house and immediately started screaming at her to run. But that story falls apart when you see Connie walking around getting her steps in. And that that timeline, the Fitbit timeline, that matches with Rick's call to 911.
Yeah.
Connie's Fitbit shows that she stops moving at 10:05, and then the alarm is set off 5 minutes after that, and then Rick called the police 5 minutes after that. So if Rick is to be believed, why did it take him an hour to make the call? His story does not fit with all of the other evidence like that does.
I know, literally the alarm. Why are you Googling the YMCA? Like, none of it tracks.
Right. The defense said that none of these electronics, especially the Fitbit, since that was like a huge piece of evidence, none of those things were ever meant to be used in a legal murder trial, that they weren't that trustworthy that you should be using them as evidence in a murder trial. And that
use it all the time.
And they're like pretty accurate. I mean, like,
listen, we're using cell phone tower pings in the early 2000s over here. Like, I think in 2022, we can look at whether or not you left home or the alarm system sounded. Like, that seems accurate enough to me.
Well, he said that they weren't all that trustworthy and that it wasn't outside of the realm of possibility that all of these electronics, because she's also sending messages to friends and she's also like, you know, so there's more things than just the Fitbit like that she's doing in the house. Right. But all of those things could have all had errors at the exact same time and that that they said the real evidence in this trial was the forensics, which showed all that unidentified DNA at every point that Rick said the intruder was, including on the gun, including in the closet, including on the safe, on the hatch. How could the DNA match Rick's story if Rick didn't even know where the DNA was going to end up? And then it ends up in all of these key places.
Yeah, this is a hot take, but I actually lean more towards trusting the electronics footprints than I actually do DNA, just with trace DNA things. Like, I don't know, people coming over in your neighborhood, your friends coming through. Like, I'm trusting more the electronic footprint than the random DNA that's like, if we're talking truly not like blood spatter and like, you know, that type of stuff. If we're talking about,
it just
like,
feels more reliable to you than the DNA does. No, I totally agree, because we think of DNA as this like, oh, they found DNA, like this infallible like thing that if
but
the DNA says
the
it, DNA doesn't lie. But Gdansky, the DA, he followed that testimony up by calling a supervisor at the forensics lab who said that throughout his 30-year career that he'd been working in forensics, so much had changed, and that included the sensitivity of DNA testing. DNA can persist for years, and it can be expelled through the air if you cough, sneeze, or even talk, and it can end up feet away. DNA from a state trooper had been found on the safe, on the debate safe, and he said he'd never even touched the safe.
That's what I'm saying. It's just DNA is like, it's just filthy in here. It's everywhere.
Yeah.
There are just germs and dead skin cells on everything.
We want DNA to be the slam dunk in crime solving, and I think sometimes it can be. I mean, don't get me wrong. Yeah. Sometimes, like, if it matches up with other evidence, then that is like the smoking gun. Oh, and his DNA is all over this gun or whatever. But a lot of times it's open as much to interpretation as circumstantial evidence is. Like, it's about interpretation. And guess who else's DNA was in all those six key points, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't know who that unidentified DNA belonged to, but his DNA was also found there. And I don't know if that unidentified DNA was all the same person, was all the same DNA profile. Like, I'm not just sure. I'm like assuming it was, because why would they keep bringing it up if it wasn't? Mm-hmm. But they never specifically said.
Before, but I always wonder, not in this case, you know, because they like owned their home and lived there. But I always wonder, like, when there's murders in like rentals or apartments, I'm like, three other people have lived in this house before me. I'm sure their DNA didn't just like leave when they did. You know what I mean?
I've heard stories about DNA being found on like a Coke can or whatever. It wasn't a Coke can, but whatever it was.
Yeah.
And it traced back to like somebody that worked in the manufacturing plant at the that manufactured the Coke bottle or whatever it was.
Yeah.
So like, again, I think there's oftentimes that DNA can be incredibly helpful, especially if it's like a lot of it, or like blood evidence.
It's like the
or
blood,
like
semen,
or like,
think
you know,
about all the places your DNA is. Like, one day you just get a knock on the door. Like, this contractor in this case, like, he just does work on their house, and all of a sudden he's wrapped up in a murder investigation. Like, am I going to get a knock on the door 10 years from now that's like, you know, the professor at Texas State, and you took his class freshman year? You know what I mean? Like, it's everywhere.
And it lasts for a really long time. It lasts for years and years.
Right.
So there could be DNA all over the place. That it's the thing that holds me up is if it's the same person, and that person was in the master bedroom closet, and then at the basement hatch, and then also on the safe, and then also on the gun. Like, that does to me say that there was somebody else there involved. But at this point,
then you add that with all of his stuff that's not adding up. Like, you didn't leave the house. You know what I mean? Like, you pair all of that.
Well, and then at this point, like, you're in such deep water. You're on trial for murder. If you did, like, have a partner in this, if you did hire somebody to do this, aren't you just ratting them out at this point to try to, like, save yourself? Like,
yeah.
You know, I don't know. I don't know who this unidentified, but I don't see.
Well, we know you would now.
Yeah, I don't see a way. I don't see a way that Rick is not involved in this with all of the electronic evidence. I just I don't. Rick took the stand in his own defense, which, like, to me, look, I know you shouldn't draw conclusions from stuff like this, but sometimes I judge books by covers, okay? And to me, if someone takes the stand in their own defense at a murder trial, it's one of two things, all right? They're an extreme narcissist, a la Jodi Arias, or they're innocent. Like, that, honestly, to me, it's one of the, you're either very narcissistic or you're innocent. Yeah. So I, you know, I don't hate that.
But you're not innocent if you don't take it either.
Correct. That doesn't mean anything to me. If you don't take the stand, that tells me nothing. But if you do take the stand, I'm thinking, okay, you are a narcissist or you are innocent.
Or you got something to say.
You got something to say. Yeah. I don't know. And again, that is not.
That's not based in fact. That's is that not your expert opinion?
That is not an expert opinion. That's just how Sue sees it, okay?
Oh, I miss her.
I know. Rick talked about how Connie's murder had irreversibly changed his and his children's lives for the worse. He talked about his affair with Sarah Ganser and how she hadn't put any pressure on him to leave Connie when she got pregnant. He talked about how Sarah had presented him with options and that if he decided to stay with Connie, she wouldn't tell anyone that he was the father of her baby. He repeated his story about the day of the murder, how there was an intruder in his closet, how he'd heard her come home and screamed that there was an intruder and for her to run. And the intruder had grabbed his hand and forced him to the ground and then ran out of the basement. That's another thing. Rick's story might have been totally bizarre and a little unbelievable, especially with the zip tying only half his body. But it never changed. I mean, he would mess up some details, like he couldn't remember if he saw Connie being shot or not. But these big major points, they were consistent. Every single time he retold this story, those were always consistent. Rick said he ran after him, and then when he got to the basement, he heard the gun go off, saw the flash of the gun, and watched Connie fall to the ground. This is what he says at trial. He said he fought the intruder off with the blowtorch and then the intruder ran. So again, all of that is consistent, like from the beginning. The big points of his story were still the same, but he had added in or changed some details that filled in some of the gaps on his timeline. He hadn't gone straight upstairs now. He'd stopped to make a coffee and had scrolled on his iPad for a while since he'd already told his boss he was going to be late. So that was like why... It may be the timeline wasn't matching up what he said before.
But, like, there's an intruder upstairs and you're, like, making coffee in here.
Well, he thought it was the cats. Like, the intruder wasn't making a ton of noise. It just sounded like something.
Some heavy-footed cats, my man.
Yeah. But, I mean, I also think, like, if you come home and you have cats and you hear a weird noise in your house, you might think, intruder. True. And then you're like, you're being stupid. It's just the cats. You know, you just.
Is that what you tell yourself? Yeah.
Yeah. And guess what? It's always the cats. Yeah. The district attorney, Gdansky, he got the chance to cross-examine Rick, and he accused him of making up a story that would make him look like a failed hero that had tried to save his wife, and he pressed him to answer questions about the inconsistencies in his story, that he and Connie had been home together for around half an hour before she was killed, and that Rick hadn't left the house that day. And Rick denied all of it. The whole time Gdansky is cross-examining him, and I think the whole, throughout this entire trial, Gdansky refers to the intruder only as Vin Diesel.
No.
The whole time. Not. The whole, oh my God. Over and over again.
I love him.
Seemed like it was a way to emphasize how ridiculous Gdansky found Rick's story. 100%.
I love that move, though.
But I did too. But Rick held his own. He continued to deny, and he was resolute. He was pretty convincing.
Did Rick also call him Vin Diesel, or did he call him the intruder?
He would call him the intruder, yeah.
I need there to be a movie starring Vin Diesel called The Intruder.
And I think actually, not about this specifically. He would even like correct Gdansky, because when he's cross-examining him, Gdansky would be like, so you saw Vin Diesel in the closet? And Rick would be like, I saw an intruder in the closet, yes.
Yeah. Which kind of probably makes
sense. So after you saw Vin Diesel in the closet, he chased you down the stairs. Yes, the intruder chased me down the stairs.
I'm surprised the judge wasn't like, all right.
I kind of am too, to be honest.
You know, enough with this shit. He's probably enjoying it too.
Yes. But the jury was not convinced by Rick's story. It only took them a day and a half to find Rick guilty of murder. Nearly 7 years had passed since Connie's murder, but finally it seemed like there was justice for her. Mm. And Rick was sentenced to 65 years in prison.
Oh, wow. How old were his boys?
Six and nine in 2015. So
then
they'd be like
basically almost like
14 and 17 now. Yeah. Ugh.
That's so tough.
I know. And this whole thing is so weird to me because it just is so avoidable. I mean, there like you had so many other options.
And even with this affair and this baby, like, you know, there's murders that happen without that whole, like, extra baggage.
Mm-hmm.
But it really seemed like, I don't know what is the truth, but if she was really not pressuring him and that was just like, I'll put John Doe on this birth certificate and, like, mm-hmm. go live my life if that was mm-hmm. truly an option, then I don't know.
I mean,
I know you're still panicking, but...
Like, you can't be that worried about... Connie finding out and divorcing you because you murdered her. So, like,
right.
You're not worried about her at all. He said he was worried about losing his friends and his family, I guess, you know.
That should have been my first red flag because who's worried about losing additional friends and social commitments past like 40, you know? Like, less is more.
Well, they were
39.
They were 39. So,
oh, well, that explains.
They hadn't reached that. Yeah. They hadn't reached that pinnacle yet. Yeah, I know. It's crazy.
All right, I'm going to try and go have a better day tomorrow. So I'm going to end this one.
Okay.
It's been an emotional roller coaster.
Emotional roller coaster. Well, thank you so much for listening. If you would like to support.
I was like, me? I forgot we haven't done this part yet. And I was like, getting ready to go. And I was like, yeah, no problem.
No, the people, MoGab. We're thanking the people.
Okay. I don't know why. I was like, okay, bye. I was like telling you goodbye. And you're like, well, thank you so much for listening. It was so kind. And I was loving it. You are welcome.
Thank you to
finally,
everybody else.
I feel appreciated after episode 109. I've been thanked.
And also thank you to our listeners for listening. So
yeah,
thank you
cool too.
So much. And if you would like to support the podcast, you can find us on social media. We're on Instagram at Creepers Pod, Facebook. We have our Facebook discussion group. That's great. We're at 1.1K members now.
What? I must have missed that. Hey.
Sometimes we're on Twitter. We also didn't talk about the Patreon, but we do have a Patreon. And you could join for as little as $5 a month. Gets you a bonus episode every month and a shout out on the podcast. It also gets you access to all of the bonus episodes that we've already done. And I think we've got like 16 or 17 up there right now. So you could have all that to binge. If you go to the $7 level, that would get you the mini creeps, which are shorter episodes. We do like two of those a month. And then we also have a $10 level that gets you ad-free episodes.
And you get a card and a sticker.
Oh,
that's
yeah.
That's like my one calling in
Sorry.
This.
Sorry. Card, sticker, signed. The card is signed by MoGab and I, and your sticker. That's at the $7 level. And then at the $10 level, you also you get all of that, plus your episodes ad-free, and a discount on merch. So check it out at patreon.com/truecrimecreepers. We would love that. That's a really, really awesome way to help support the podcast. And otherwise, make sure you subscribe so that you know exactly when our next episode drops, when I'll tell MoGab another wild story.
Bye, peeps and creeps.